Welcome, haunters. I'm your host, Ed Gannon, professional haunter, Something Wicked Productions, Wicked Amusements, and Haunt Dogs. And in this episode of Something Wicked, we'll talk about controlling, refurbishing, and repairing animatronics. What are the tools, tricks, and resources you'll need to control your animations, how to troubleshoot problems when they don't do what you want them to, and what devices you can use. Now, don't fast forward because perhaps you don't use animations in your show. There's still some good stuff in here. Maybe it's because I've mentioned animatronics in a few segments lately, but I've been getting a lot of requests to demystify animation controllers, how to use, choose, and fix them. Often, I'll get called to update or repair an old animation. Maybe it isn't working or doesn't do what the client wants, has no sound, or they want it to work with all the other animations they already have. What the animation can do, how it works, does it have sound, and whether it's compatible with any other animations all depends upon who made it. Back in the day, there were only a few people around making what would be called professional animatronics for Halloween. These were mostly Eric Prince in New Jersey, Bob Van and VP Animations in Connecticut, and later Scare Factory. There were a few other smaller fabricators, but most of what you can find today came from these guys. It was all custom, and it wasn't cheap. Eric Prince and, of course, Scare Factory are still around. Bob Van has unfortunately passed away now. All these companies originally used their own devices to control their animations. These were usually hard-coded into a chip and could not be changed without going back to their creator, kind of like Frankenstein.
Why do you look at me that way, Dr. Frankenstein? I am your creature. But which one of us is the horror that scares little children? Is it me? Or is it the man that made me?
Later models had simple buttons to load sound and program simple movements in real time, but had no way to save either of these. So even if it were possible to change something, a movement or a sound, once you did, the original program was lost forever. So you better hope you can do a good job.
You're killing me!
These controllers were also dedicated. This means they did what they were programmed to do and did not communicate with any other controllers. Not like today, where you can connect a Boobox FlexMax 16 to other such products and control it all from that one device. But more about that later. This didn't mean you could not do complex movement or couldn't control many animations using one of these old controllers. You could, but it was very complicated, and it had to be designed to incorporate all of them the first time, no updating or changing. One controller could only do so many on-off movements, so if you had several animations to work, they needed their own controller or mechanism that would be triggered by the first one. Some of these other devices were ingeniously accomplished by a motor with an electrical switch and cam setup that would turn several things on and off as it rotated. Like a timer for your sprinkler system or nighttime lights. You moved pegs on these discs to turn power on or off. Each disc could control one solenoid, for example, and there were several of these discs on the motor. Since each peg is in different places, you could get a complex movement from a simple mechanism, controlling several pistons, all moving at different times, and this low-tech device worked forever. They still work. My buddy Tim Dunn up at Fright Kingdom in Nashua, New Hampshire, collects a lot of these classic animations, and all of them are still running in his show, some 30 years later. That is pretty incredible. Really, think about that. Now, to get back to what I was saying, these days, you can buy a Boo Box from Fright Props, download the software, load a sound, program the animation in minutes by yourself, and all at a fair price. These older ones, not so much. Let's say you had a room you wanted animated to tell a story. You hit the trigger button, background music comes on, and the Greeter Ghoul animation, like VP's old Mr. Howell, starts giving you his spiel. Then in one part he says, "But we don't believe in such things, do we?" And all hell breaks loose. The painting behind the fireplace disappears, and a mass of fleshy eyes and mouths appear, all moving. Books pop in and out of the bookcase. Flowers pop up out of a vase held by a skeletal hand. Lights flicker. The soundtrack has thunder. A bird moves and says, "Nevermore, nevermore." A head pops up and off its statue base, turns, looks around the room, then goes back down. The sound quiets, and Mr. Howe says, "Now go, and touch no thing on your journey. Go! We may see each other again, but I doubt it." Whew, pretty awesome. And a similar setup was done for the old Spooky World in Berlin, Mass. Back in 1994. This used one large controller box, which sent out signals to each of the other animations, and it had the background sound. Mr. Howell, a skeletal ghoul in a smoking jacket, sitting in a wingback chair, was controlled by his own box that came on when triggered. But all his commands for movement and speech came from a tape deck that had tones on an audio cassette. The left track had the DMX tones, and these went to the control box to work all the pistons in Mr. Howell. The right track went to a powered speaker under his chair, which had the actual sound so you could hear him talk. Several lines went to the bookcase, the vase with skeletal hand holding flowers, and the quagmire, that's the Lovecraftian animation behind the fireplace. These were triggered by the main box. As long as it tripped the relay inside, the animations would continue to operate, and then the signal stopped, each turned off in turn. These were controlled individually with one of the 110-volt programmable cam timers I mentioned before. Each of these cams turns about once every 20 or 30 seconds, repeating several on and off processes. The head that popped off must have had two pistons, one to move it up and down, and one to move it from side to side. These were controlled directly from the main controller. So you see, if you wanted to change one piece of this orchestration, like make Mr. Howell's speech shorter, even if you could, you would have to individually adjust several other things after that to make it match up. Triggering the satellite animations like the bookcase of the flowers would be easily done enough because their movements are on a loop, but the statue movements, lightning, light triggers, and the soundtrack would all have to be changed to match the new timing. Back then, you really couldn't do it. So now you have an idea of what some of these classic animations require to operate. Let me say, the easiest, quickest way to change them or update them is to switch out their controllers with Boo Boxes, Boo Tunes, and Peekaboo ACs from Fright Props. Everything talks to each other, they can be slaved together to work as one unit, they actually do what they say they're supposed to do, and most importantly, they are easy to program. I would definitely recommend recording the original audio, if it exists, onto your computer before doing anything, however. Even if you do not plan to use it, there is a nostalgia involved with some of these classics, and many who remember them would love to hear them again, myself included. If any of you have any of those, I'd love to get a copy.
Whoa, stop right there.
Now, if, however, you still need to troubleshoot an older animation, or even a newer one that's not working, always start from the power backwards. First thing you check, is it getting power, and is it getting enough power, or the right power? I would highly recommend investing in an electrical tester. Even the cheaper ones from Harbor Freight will do the two biggest functions you will need. These are continuity, with the Greek omega symbol on it. This tests if electricity or signal is going through two given points. And the second is voltage. Most testers will switch automatically between high voltage and low voltage. Some have a switch. The quickest way to fry electronics is putting 110 volts to something that requires low voltage. I know, I've done it myself. Most of what you will encounter is 24 volts for older animations and solenoids, 12 volts, which is now the most common and used for most LED lighting as well, and 5 volts, which is servos, some switches, sensors, and relays. First, determine what power the device should be getting. If in doubt, start small, then go up, not the other way around. If you have the original power supply, somewhere on it, in very small letters, it will have an input, 110 volts usually, and output, which could be anything from 24 volts down to 3.5 volts. Put your meter on this power supply, or where the power comes into your controller, and see if it is getting the correct amount of voltage. If not, get a new supply and try that. If it is, move over to the output of the device. Is it triggering whatever it's supposed to trigger electrically? And is it putting out the correct voltage when it does trigger? If you have pneumatics, which most do, what power are the solenoids looking for? 24 volts? 12 volts? If the solenoids need 24 volts and you have a 12-volt power supply hooked up, you may get sound, but nothing will move, for example. If the power is all correct, check the solenoids physically. Most have a button you can push without any power hooked up, which will make them trigger. Pro tip, make sure the air is on and up to pressure first. If this makes your animation move, then you know it's the power getting to it, the signal sending the power not triggering, or the solenoid is bad. This happens sometimes. Some solenoids have a small flathead screwdriver line on that physical button that can lock it open or close, too. If this button is turned, it will not work either. Checking that may save you some money and time. And you proceed in this way until you find out exactly what is not working. I find with controllers that are far away from the animations they direct, an LED light on a short lead can save a lot of time when testing if a signal is being sent out to the piston. If it is but not working, you know it may be the wire between them that needs attention, for example. Once you find the culprit, adjust, fix, or replace as necessary. One tip here, once you get everything all working and it does that several times, after you turn the power off and on again too, take pictures of your configuration, all components of it. This way, if something should ever get disconnected or torn out by mistake, you can easily get it back to a working configuration again. Many of you may have a temporary show, so this picture can really help you get it set up quickly next year. There are some times you may not be able to find what is wrong, or the controller is just no good or unreliable. Connecting the solenoids directly to the correct power and making them move will tell you where you stand. Same with sound, which is where I always start when it comes to programming any animatronic. It may just be time to upgrade. I will say, when working with classic animations, there is a strong satisfaction seeing them work again, especially if they have not done so in a long time. So don't be afraid to jump in and make things move. Awesomeness! Oh, look at the time. All right, we'll wrap up this segment. In future episodes, we'll talk about more aspects of professional haunting, their methods, philosophies, how-tos, and so much more. But I see our moments here are up. So until the next time, be safe. This is Wick Ed Gannon, www.somethingwickedproductions.com, saying, have a wicked day.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.